From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up in the wake of the shooting down of a U.S. drone, President Trump announced additional sanctions on Iran today.
As you know, we've done very massive sanctions. We're increasing the sanctions now. But the response is always going to be very strong. I think that they want to negotiate. I don't think they like the position they're in. Their economy is absolutely broken.
The president made those comments yesterday on NBC's Meet the Press. But will sanctions be enough? Our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin joins us for that conversation in just a moment. Also over the weekend, 20 of the two dozen Democratic candidates for president appeared at a Planned Parenthood forum in South Carolina focused on, you guessed it, abortion. But just how far this gaggle of candidates is willing to go to please Planned Parenthood and crowd might shock you. We'll talk about it with Kristen Hawkins, president of Students for Life. And as more and more states move to direct taxpayer dollars away from Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider, some states like Ohio are directing money to pro-life alternatives. Ohio State Senator Larry Obhoff provides the details. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. Before I jump into our first topic for today, just a quick reminder. I mean, as you hear each and every day, whether it's here or picking up a local newspaper, the radical left is showing their true colors. Whether it is their attacks on religious freedom or the unborn or now the born, it's clear our freedoms are at stake and innocent lives hang in the balance. FRC will not stop fighting to uphold our religious liberties and to save unborn babies, but we need your help. We need you to partner with us. Our fiscal year ends on June the 30th, this week, and we must finish this year strong to sustain the momentum for pro-faith, pro-life policies here in Washington, D.C., and literally around the country. And we've got some very generous donors that have put forth some challenge matches. In one, we have a challenge match of $25,000, doubling your gift dollar for dollar. So every dollar you give will turn into $2. $4 turns into $8, $5, $10. You get it. But you got to act now. We got folks standing by to take your call. If you'd like to partner with us in ensuring that religious freedom remains strong in America and that we protect the most innocent among us, that number, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. We have folks standing by to take your call, or you can go online to TonyPerkins.com and make your contribution there as well. All right, U.S.-Iranian relations are growing increasingly tense after Iran shot down a U.S. military drone late last week. Trump ordered a retaliatory strike on Iran last week, only to call it off just minutes before the attack. In fact, that was a topic yesterday on NBC Meet the President. This is what the president had to say.
They came and they said, sir, we're ready to go. We'd like a decision. I said, I want to know something before you go. How many people will be killed? In this case, Iranians. Sir, I'd like to get back to you on that. Great people, these generals. They said, came back, said, sir, approximately 150. And I thought about it for a second. And I said, you know what? They shot down an unmanned drone. And here we are sitting with 150 dead people. And I didn't like it. I didn't think it was proportionate.
Joining me now in studio to provide his analysis is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He serves as FRC's Executive Vice President. He spent 36 and a half years in the United States Army, serving his last 4 years as a Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. He was also one of the original members of the U.S. Army Delta Force. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
General, the president's comments there, last minute pulling back from a military strike, some have criticized him for that. Your thoughts?
Well, as a former military guy, I would like to have seen him just slam Iran. However, I'm glad he didn't because I think the decision he made was the right decision. Tony, the situation in Iran with the Iranian people is not good. They're very unhappy with their government. The situation is fragile. And I think had he followed through with that strike, and killed a group of Iranians, what he would have done is unified people that are right now very much against their government. And the worst thing he could have done probably was unify them and give them a common cause. And that common cause would be the United States.
And you have a little knowledge about Iran. 40 years ago, you were a part of an effort to go in and rescue U.S. hostages that were being held in Iran.
I was. The night of the 24th of April, 1980, we landed about 100 miles from Tehran, and we were on our way in to rescue 52 Americans who were being held by the Ayatollah Khomeini's followers at the U.S. Embassy there. And, of course, we had a tragic accident that took the lives of 8 servicemen, and we barely got out alive ourselves. So, as people say, I spent a couple of years there one night.
Speaking of the president pulling back on this, he made reference to this yesterday on Meet the Press about the sanctions, but today announcing pretty tough sanctions against specific Iranian officials.
Yeah, that's right. He announced sanctions specifically against President Rouhani and 8 of his senior leaders, some of which are military, and at least one, that being the foreign minister Zarif. And that's pretty significant.
These sanctions clearly are having an impact upon Iran. It's in some ways it appears that it's driving a further wedge between the Iranian people and the government.
Indeed it is. And you think about the situation in Venezuela and then compare, Iran is very similar because the people blame only their government for not being able to meet their basic needs, to include being able to feed the people there, to provide electricity and basic functions for them. They blame their own government for that. And this that's one of the results of the sanctions that have been imposed. In fact, remember that once we pulled out of the JCPOA last year, last May, all sanctions that were on before the JCPOA was signed went back into effect. So these are tough sanctions that we've got against them right now.
Today, as President Trump signed his executive order announcing these additional sanctions against Iran, he wrote this, or said this, "These measures represent a strong and proportionate response to Iran's increasingly provocative actions. We will continue to increase pressure on Tehran until the regime abandons its dangerous activities and aspirations, including the pursuit of nuclear weapons, increased enrichment of uranium, development of ballistic missiles, engagement in support for or terrorism, fueling of foreign conflicts and belligerent acts directed against the United States and its allies. Never can Iran have a nuclear weapon," end quote.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's been pretty clear about that since he became the president of the United States. Look, people need to understand that these mullahs that are really the power base there are Shia 12ers. And they believe that their Messiah will not return until the world is in bloodshed and chaos, at which point their Messiah will return, establish Sharia, and bring world peace. There is no better way for them to create that bloodshed and chaos than to have a nuclear weapon and use that against their hated enemy, Israel, in particular. So I think that the president is absolutely right. We cannot allow them, even if we have to run military operations to be able to stop them, we cannot allow them to have a nuclear weapon because with a nuclear warhead and the not only the will but the incentive to use it, it's a very dangerous situation.
But it's a game changer in the Middle East.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. In studio with me, General Jerry Boykin, discussing the president's announcement today of new additional sanctions on Iran. I want to go back to something you said just a moment ago, General, about the president showing great restraint in not using military action because it might rally the Iranian people, kind of along with their government against the United States. Is it possible that the Iranian regime is enticing the United States into some type of conflict that would allow them to rally the people of Iran?
Oh, I think the Iranians, in the case of this situation, I think they would have loved it if we had gone in and taken out a missile battery or something, you know, and killed some Iranians. You know, they don't care about the people to begin with. But I think they would have loved that because it would have been a rallying cry for them. It would have probably united a good portion of the population there. So I think that, again, the president showed a great deal of restraint, and he didn't take the bait, which I think was offered by Rouhani and the Iranian government.
I mean, if that's the case, I mean, this is showing a tremendous amount of insight and wisdom from the Trump administration not to play into the hands of the Iranian regime.
Well, it really is, and I don't think there's any question that his CIA, his intelligence community, has been telling him what the conditions inside Iran really are, about the unrest, about the riots, and about the discontent with Sharia, the Islamic law that's been imposed on them there. So I think the intel community has advised him. I also think that his military commanders, as well as his national security advisors, have also influenced his decision on this. And people talk about John Bolton wanting to go bomb them into the Stone Age. I just don't believe that. You know, Bolton is a hawk in terms of national security issues, but Bolton's also a very practical man and a very wise man. So I think the military counseled against a strike, given the fragility of the situation internally. I think they counseled against it. And I think the National Security Council probably supported that, stood with that. And I think that the president came out with the right solution in the end.
But unlike the previous administration, the president has not taken military action off the table. He's made it quite clear that he is willing to use the military and have strikes if necessary.
Yeah, let's not forget that right before he spoke with Kim Jong-un, he dropped the MOAB, mother of all bombs, in Afghanistan, and he fired 59 Tomahawk missiles into Syria, into an area where there were about 100 Russians not too far away. So he will use military force when that is the best option. But in this case, he determined that it was not.
Speaking of North Korea, we're almost out of time, but the president like he did in North Korea, has said he is open to talks with Iranian officials without any preconditions. What does that say about this president?
Well, it says he really is looking for a diplomatic solution to this, but I think that I don't think the Iranians are smart enough at this point to accept this opportunity. I think it's only a matter of time, though, until they're going to realize this is that the only way out is for them to sit down and talk with our president and come to a diplomatic solution.
I think they should, I don't know if they do, but they should realize that this president, that his red lines are drawn in a permanent marker.
Yeah, that's right.
They're not easily erased.
Right.
General Boykin, thanks so much
for
joining us. We'll continue to watch this as this has a huge impact on the Middle East and so many other aspects of what's happening in foreign policy today. All right, folks, when we come back over the weekend, the Democratic candidates, 20 actually, of the 24, were in South Carolina for a Planned Parenthood forum. Yes, you could guess what the focus was, abortion. But how far they're willing to go, well, that might surprise you. We talk about it next. Don't go away.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, we've got folks standing by. If you'd like to partner with us as we come to the end of our fiscal year, we have a challenge grant that's been put out that for every dollar you give, it'll be matched. So if you'd like to join with us, partner with us, keep us strong as we defend faith, family, and freedom here in our nation's capital. Give us a call right now, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. Okay, over the weekend, Saturday to be exact, in South Carolina, 20 of the 24 presidential candidates on the Democratic side gathered at a Planned Parenthood Action Forum on, yes, you guessed it, abortion. This party, Democratic Party, is unified in out-radicalizing one another when it comes to abortion. This one clip, I just want to play this quick clip before we get to our guest. This is Senator Harris of California talking about what she would do if she had the levers of control here in our nation's capital.
My intention is to, as president, work on the offense. And so I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. On this issue, as I said, I ran a Department of Justice. I am going to require that for any state that passes legislation on the issue of access to reproductive health, if they have a history of passing legislation that has interfered with or suppressed a woman's access to reproductive health, that anything that they propose and pass has to be reviewed by my Department of Justice to determine whether it complies with the Constitution of the United States and Roe v. Wade and its progeny. That's called preclearance. So the law has to go through preclearance through the Department of Justice. And until that law is determined to be in compliance with Roe v. Wade and its progeny, it cannot go into effect.
Joining us now with her thoughts on Senator Harris's proposal is Kristen Hawkins. She is the president of Students for Life. Kristen, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me today, Tony.
Kristen, how radical can the left get in its advocacy for abortion?
Well, I think you just heard it there. And that clip from Kamala Harris, and you're going to be hearing it over and over again as this, 2020 presidential cycle begins. I think what we thought was, you know, a for sure radical abortion president and a potential President Hillary Clinton is nothing compared to what some of these candidates are now saying. You know, what we've seen is that these candidates that are running for president, running against President Trump, are in lockstep with the Democratic Party. Now they're even calling for a repeal of Hyde, and it's not even a controversial thing to them, despite the fact that the vast majority of Americans, the majority of Democrats, don't want the Hyde Amendment repealed, which, you know, prevents our taxpayer dollars from funding abortions. Planned Parenthood's got their hooks so deep into these candidates because they've become one of the largest political machines in Washington, D.C.
Now, you point out in a recent Fox News column that, you know, voters choosing among the Democratic presidential candidates have really no policy options when it comes to this one issue of abortion. I mean, they're tripping over themselves to show how pro-abortion they are. But Kristen, that's not where the majority of voters in this country are.
That's right. And that's what's so, you know, I think so alarming to people when we meet students on college campuses who aren't, you know, the majority of students we talk with every day, they aren't Republicans. They have no idea how extreme the Democratic Party has become about abortion. We did a poll just this January, and only 7% of the millennials we polled identified said that they agreed with the extreme platform, the abortion platform of abortion whenever, wherever, and taxpayer funded that's right now in the DNC. And it's really, it's really a sad state because, you know, for us, we want to see this to be a bipartisan issue in Washington, D.C. That's when the babies win, is when we have both Democrats and Republicans fighting over who's more pro-life, who's protecting life more. And what we've seen is just, you know, over and over, Planned Parenthood has continued to grow their political dominance. You know, even in 2018, the off-year election, they are bragging about spending more than $50 million in the off-year election. So, I mean, Planned Parenthood is going to have a huge election campaign, and that's what we've seen. That's why the candidates were tripping over themselves in South Carolina to all be there and to be, you know, right butting up to Dr. Leanna Wynn, the new president of Planned Parenthood, to prove that they're more of a friend to Planned Parenthood than anyone else.
Yeah, that's so shocking, given this organization under investigation for the trafficking in baby body parts. I mean, they've
been under investigation.
Yeah, it's incredible that the Democratic candidates are trying to curry favor with them. Very quickly, before we run out of time, Kristen, you were there in South Carolina with a pro-life counter rally outside of their forum. What kind of response did you get?
Well, our team had, you know, we actually had some really good response because, you know, we were the young people. The young people were the ones rallying with the pro-life rally out in front of the Planned Parenthood Forum. And so we had some great conversations with Planned Parenthood supporters as they were walking in. We were actually using our talking points, using the messaging we use on college campuses to educate Planned Parenthood's own supporters. And most of them were shocked. A lot of them said that, you know, what we were saying wasn't true. And we were saying, you know, we're using Planned Parenthood's own information from their own annual report. It's not hard to find out what the abortion life is all about. And it's always about abortion.
Well, Kristen Hawkins, God bless you and your efforts as you continue to hold up the sanctity of human life right there on our college campuses and on the front lines. We're grateful for you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Kristen Hawkins with Students for Life. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Well, speaking of Planned Parenthood, as many, many states are moving away from directing taxpayer dollars to Planned Parenthood, they're sending it elsewhere to pro-life alternatives. In fact, the state of Ohio, yes, they just dedicated more money to care pregnancy centers. Senator Abhoff from Ohio joins us next with the details. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive. Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And again, folks standing by to take your phone call. If you would like to be a part of joining with FRC, partnering with us as we come down to the end of our fiscal year, we'd love to hear from you. 800-225-4008. Every dollar you give will be matched. 800-225-4008. Okay. Among the changes the Ohio Senate made to the House version of their $69 billion state operating budget was a $5 million boost to a program that funds pro-life crisis pregnancy centers. Now, the $5 million is five times the funding that normally goes to the parenting and pregnancy program. Now, this is, it's interesting because many states moving away from funding Planned Parenthood, directing monies into more pro-life alternatives. Joining me now is the president of the Ohio Senate, Senator Larry Obhoff, who was a key part of driving this through the legislature. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Senator, what's behind the motivation to put more money into these care pregnancy centers?
Well, we have about 200 pregnancy centers across Ohio, and they're providing pretty valuable services to women in need. And that's true for rural communities, suburban and urban alike. And they're primarily serving low-income women, women below the poverty level who need help. And what we've tried to do in recent years is fund some of the pro-life alternatives to move away from what we had been doing previously. We actually did a bill a few years ago to reprioritize funding for women's health away from organizations that are performing non-therapeutic abortions, so largely Planned Parenthood. They actually took us to court over it. It went up to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in the federal courts, and the state was successful this spring in defending that law. So this is the first budget opportunity that we've had since then to invest additional funds into crisis pregnancy centers, and I'm proud of the work that we've been able to do so far.
Senator, in the last decade or more and more of these centers have become full service medical clinics where, as you say, they serve the underprivileged, many of those that don't have access in some of these areas. But it's done without any ethical concerns because there's no abortions there. It's just health care and help for these women who are pregnant.
That's right, and they're providing a lot of different services, whether that's parenting classes or referrals for access to prenatal care or other medical and mental health addiction support services, needs for mothers. So there are some pregnancy centers in my area that pass out some of the things that new mothers need, clothing, diapers, those types of things. So they really are running the gamut on what they're providing to people who need it. And they're doing some very good work in our communities. And again, we've got over 200 of those centers here in Ohio. So chances are, whatever community you live in Ohio, they're helping someone in your community or touching someone that you know.
Senator Obhof, I know that you've got clear Republican majorities in there, but there has been opposition to this. Do you see any problem with this moving forward in the budget?
Well, we are in conference committee right now, so we're sorting out the differences between the House and the Senate versions of the bill this week. But I feel pretty strongly that this will be in the final version of the bill. We have a strong pro-life majority in the House, and interestingly, in the Senate, while we had this funding in there and while we had a substantial tax cut, we worked pretty closely with our friends on the other side of the aisle, and we passed the bill 33-0. So. I think that even some of the pro-choice-minded Democrats in the Senate recognized that additional funding for women's health and additional options for women's health is a positive thing.
Well, that's quite encouraging, actually. And I imagine the Governor DeWine, clearly pro-life, would eagerly sign this into law.
I think that's right. Governor DeWine is pro-life and has a long record on that. And earlier this year, we passed the Heartbeat Bill, which was a Senate-sponsored bill, and Governor DeWine signed that pretty quickly, within a day or two of when we passed it. So I think overall, on the ground here in the Ohio legislature and in the governor's office, you've got some good allies for the pro-life movement.
Well, Senator Obhof, what I like about this is, you know, as you redirect money, as states redirect money away from Planned Parenthood because of the ethical concerns, the complaint or the charge is always raised that this is going to deny women health care services. This answers that question.
I think that's right. And again, whether it's parenting classes or giving ultrasounds or providing things like diapers and clothing, they're doing a lot of different things that are helping women in need. And while the Democratic members of the legislature aren't supportive of this provision, I do believe that they will ultimately be in support of the overall package in the bill that we're presenting.
All right. Senator Larry Obhof, thank you so much, and thanks for your leadership on what I think is a very important and creative solution to many of the problems facing us out there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Ohio Senator Larry Obhof. He's the president of the Ohio Senate. I like that idea. I like being solving problems, moving forward. And I hope other state legislatures might think about this. All right, folks, don't go away. We're going to come back with your phone calls here on Washington Watch.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. All right, we are coming down to the wire at the end of our fiscal year. Our fiscal year runs July 1st through June 30th. That's how we do all of our budgeting. And as we come down to the end of the year, how we approach the next year depends on how we end the year. And so we need your assistance in order to keep Washington Watch and on the air and the programs and the resources that we're providing to Christians across the country. We need your partnership. So I'm going to ask you to partner with us. In fact, right now, if you do this, there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can become a monthly partner with us. We can tell you about that if you want to give us a call. Right now, anything you give will be matched, up to $25,000. We have a matching grant that's out there, challenge. And so if you'd like to give us a call, we've got folks standing by to take your phone call. 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. And look, you know, we're talking about these issues, and these are real. These aren't these aren't hypothetical. We're not making them up. You heard, you know, Senator Harris from California talking about what she would do if she were president, making every state – you talk about usurping the rights of the states – making every state pre-clear. That means that before a state legislature could exercise its authority granted to them by the people who elected them, they would have to come to her Department of Justice and get permission to protect the unborn. Now, given what is coming out of the lips of so many of these Democratic candidates, do you think they would ever allow a state to protect the unborn? I mean, think about what's been happening in the last really 10 years since Barack Obama was elected and began his attack on the unborn. We saw states pushing back, and we've seen more pro-life legislation pass in the last decade than in the previous three decades. It's because the people have realized what's going on. What Harris and crew want to do is put a lid on that. In fact, I got another clip. But before I play this next clip of Joe Biden, Let me give you the phone number. This is what I want to talk about. I want to know, how concerned are you by the Democratic presidential candidate's blind allegiance to the abortion lobby? Does this concern you? I think it should, but I wonder. I mean, I wonder how stirred you are. If you're not stirred, don't call. But this is quite significant, I think. Abortion is one of those issues. I mean, it's the shedding of innocent blood. And look, if there was ever a time we need to be praying, and by the way, coming up this Sunday is the call to fall, where we're encouraging churches around the country. We do this every year, Sunday before July 4th, encouraging churches to take maybe 5 minutes or less. Some churches take all their entire service, but you don't have to do that. Just get on your knees as a congregation and pray for our nation. Pray for our president. Pray for our Supreme Court. Pray for our leaders. Pray for these Democratic candidates, that their eyes might be open to what they're advocating. Pray that America will turn back to God. Call to fall. You can find out more about that at frc.org. All right, the number 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. That's the number to call to talk to me. And this is what I want to know. How concerned are you by the Democratic presidential candidate's blind allegiance to the abortion lobby? Does it concern you? Does it concern you? And how much does it concern you? And what might you do as a result of that? Is it going to motivate you to encourage people to show up and vote, to speak out, to do what Kristen Hawkins and her team did by going outside of this forum, Planned Parenthood candidate forum in South Carolina? I mean, look, they're speaking up. These are young people speaking up. We need to speak up. We cannot be silent, lest our silence be taken as acquiescence, as approval. 866-372-7234. All right, here's this clip, same place, South Carolina, on Saturday, Joe Biden talking about Roe v. Wade and the law.
We're in a situation where I would codify Roe v. Wade as defined by Casey. It should be the law, and there's no reason why, if the Supreme Court makes a judgment that everybody's worried about with these appeals going to the Supreme Court, that it changed, I would codify Roe v. Wade and Casey.
And that's very interesting. Number one, it shows that I would codify into law Roe v. Wade and Casey. Now, the point is Casey, or Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was 1992, I believe, early 90s, is really the governing law as it pertains to abortion. It whittled away at Roe v. Wade. But it's interesting that they acknowledge they would codify it into law, meaning it's not law. This is a Supreme Court decision. And so they want to protect what they have been hanging on to for years, which is, you know, it's like a rain cloud. It's really not much there, not much to hang on to. So they want to codify it into law. An interesting acknowledgement that Roe v. Wade is not the law. Planned Parenthood versus Casey is not the law. It's a Supreme Court decision that we've been acting as if it's the law. And what's happening now, this is interesting, folks, listen. What's happening now, as states have challenged it, it's like, all right, now we realize the emperor has no clothes. They're challenging it. And so what do they want to do? They want to quickly try to codify it into law. Harris wanting to put a lid on all pro-life legislation coming from the state, saying that has to be pre-cleared through the Department of Justice. It's because they realize they've been standing on a fraudulent foundation. This is all a creation of the courts. And finally, state legislatures across the country, encouraged by people like you, are challenging this. In fact, many pro-lifers have run for, you know, one of the motivating factors for me to run for office 20 years ago and pass a number of pieces of pro-life legislation. Many, many pro-life moms, dads, sons, and daughters have run for office and are now serving in these positions and have passed legislation. And now the left realizes that we know that it's up. We know what they're doing. They're the facade has come off. This is not time to pull back. It is time to move forward. All right, let's take a few phone calls. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Jim in Mississippi. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. Hope I don't sound like a broken record. But we have been drugged so far over the line. I don't even think we realize how far over the line we've been drugged. You know, the Declaration is the organic foundation for the Constitution and the ideological blueprint of who we are as Americans. We don't speak that language. And because we don't speak that language, we can't speak with authority to the issues. And, you know, we have been catapulted by the left to the first sentence of the Declaration, which says, you know, it comes a time when you have to draw a line and you have to dissolve the political bands with who you've been connected because they have become so ideologically polarized. And so if we don't speak that language, then what's our rallying point? And we treat the Declaration like an archaic document, but it is a legal charter still in effect. It said, we therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in general Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. That document is still in effect, and those precepts are the guiding blueprint that we've got to get reacquainted with, or this thing is going to implode.
I could not agree more with you, Jim. I think you're absolutely right. I think that's one of the reasons it's not being taught in our schools today. Most people simply have no understanding of those organic documents. And the fact that the, you know, we're a covenantal nation and the Constitution is a part of that covenant, and it's an agreement by which we as the people agree to be governed. So that's why, you know, when the president talks about that, you know, he is pursuing and has pursued and has put in place judges that are constitutionalist, that means that they understand the Constitution is not just some, you know, document written in erasable ink, but rather it is an agreement by which the American people agree to be governed. And so it has meaning and it has importance. In fact, it is quite significant because that's really that's the whole foundation. And if we can't expect – if we can't have assurances that those who govern are going to govern according to that document, then it's – I mean, it's just – everything's off. We have no idea what they're going to do. We have no way of holding them accountable. But to your point, I'm actually encouraged, especially on this life issue, where we see more and more states, more legislatures pushing back. And the left, they realize that we've pulled back the curtain, and they're about to lose everything they've been this facade that they built in 1973 through Roe v. Wade. And it's being challenged, successfully challenged, as we move up, you know, the judicial chain of the Supreme Court. All right, let's take a few more calls here. Let's go to Hugh in North Carolina. Hugh, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. This is Hugh Riddick. On the abortion issue that you were speaking of a few minutes ago, and by the way, I really like your program. It's exceptional. On the abortion issue, the Republicans have sent me surveys the last, I don't know how long it is. I mean, it's been three surveys in the last little while. And on each of the survey, I noticed they don't have the abortion on there, you know, as what rates is the most important or whatever. Is it because it's a foregone conclusion or is there some other reason?
No, I'm surprised by that, Hugh. Well, I say I'm surprised. Maybe I shouldn't be. I am surprised because this president has made it a priority in his administration, and it's organic. It's genuine with him. I can tell you that from personal experience. I would say this, Hugh, that the Republicans – I'm going to say something critical here. I think the Republicans could have solved this a long time ago. I really do. I think both parties, I want to be very clear with this. I know that when I say this, this does not apply to all Republicans. There are many, many committed pro-life Republicans, and there are some committed pro-life Democrats. Now, not as many as there used to be, but there are some. But I think the parties have played this as a political issue to their advantage. And what I like about what I see happening at the states is that the states, by and large, are not using this as a political gambit, but they're actually moving to resolve it and to truly uphold the sanctity of human life. In fact, I've defined this as I think this is what kind of repentance, if we always talk about repenting from a spiritual standpoint, but repentance is a turning. It's turning around. It's doing the opposite, changing your mind. And that's what's happening on abortion at the state level. And this is one thing that gives me great encouragement right now. So, Hugh, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate you your listening in. Hey, look, this is a very, very critical issue, and we must get this right as a nation. That's why I think there's this radical lurch to the left to try to take us over the edge into infanticide. Now, I do think that ultimately there's a price to pay for this, but I do believe that God is merciful. He's merciful with nations as he is with individuals. And as human beings, you know, we are created in the image of God, but man is fallen. And in order to think right and act right, we need to be redeemed and we need to be sanctified. And that's why God sent his Son to die for our sins individually and collectively as people, as we align ourselves with God, first receiving his forgiveness through Jesus Christ, and then walking as we can, not in perfection, we'll never make that, but seeking to obey him, embracing life because it is created in the image of God. I don't care what color it is. I don't care what side of the tracks it comes from, what zip code it was conceived in. It is created in the image of God. Therefore, it has value, inherent value, and we need to treat it as such. And as we do that, you know, we see a nation that embraces life, and we see a nation that comes in alignment with the values and the principles of God, and God's blessing then flows upon that nation. It flows upon individuals and collectively nations. And this is why this is such a critical issue. I think we're at a moment of decision as a nation. And so I would encourage you, I would hope that you would be disturbed, deeply disturbed by what's being advocated by many on the Democratic side, and disturbed by apathy on the side of conservatives and Republicans. Pray, pray, pray. And then when we take a stand, well, you know what the Apostle Paul says. When you've taken your stand, well, until next time, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.